We'll begin with the invocation. Toward the One, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being, united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance.
Welcome, everyone. This is our third afternoon here. And let's introduce ourselves and say hello to each other and maybe say anything that you care to say about how you're doing, how you're feeling at this moment, on this afternoon, at this place, in your process of being here for the week or for the day or for however long you're here for. My name is Mirza, and it took us a little while to settle into Oregon. We're coming from California, and our kids, getting them on the rhythm and ourselves on the rhythm, and today we've finally slowed down and feel very cozy in the weather and very content.
I'm Amir, and I'm feeding back. I am feeling good. It's nice. Yesterday was just arriving here, and today I'm here. I'm feeling good.
I'm John Fazel. And I'm overwhelmed at the beauty of the setting for this seminar, the campus, and the beautiful architecture. It's just, it's perfect for Sufi seminar.
I'm Wally. I'm feeling magnificently full. Which I felt after day one, which I felt after day two. I'm still feeling. I'm ready for a few more petals.
No, I'm Elijah. I'm content to be on the fringes.
It's great.
I'm Shahana. I'm happy to be here too, and admiring all the roses.
I'm Tajeli, and apart from the Northwest allergies, I'm feeling really good. I was a little bit too filled up after last night, but now I feel like I'm getting balanced.
Nancy, and this has been my first Sufi experience these last few days, and just really appreciating the welcome and the beautiful practices, and so.
I'm Akbar, and so I'm just grateful to be here with everybody, and today feels like somehow some things are clicking into place and aligning in other ways. The previous days there was more to do, or more process, or inner process, or turmoil, and today feels more kind of just aligned, so. But yeah, feel good.
I'm Tasneem, and I'm from here, so I was part of the crew that helped the day before, and it took me a little while to kind of settle in. But today, I really feel much more just settled in here, just being present and a participant instead of seeing all these things that need to be done. So, more restful today.
I'm Satya. I'm also feeling more settled in today. It takes a couple days to get the lay of the land and get our kids on a good rhythm. And my kids have been our kids have been really super enjoying themselves here. They've been amazing, so I feel I can really relax because they're in good hands.
Welcome, everyone. I wanted to start this afternoon with the image of the lotus flower. Take a moment in your mind's eye to visualize that perfect flower. What does perfection look like? Buddhist tradition, the lotus flower is the symbol of perfection, enlightenment, harmony, beauty. But the lotus flower doesn't grow out of any water. Surprisingly, it only grows out of the murkiest, darkest mud. From the material that feels so unbeautiful and unharmonious. It takes that material, that mud, to sprout this most perfect flower. And out of other water, clearer waters, beautiful flowers emerge, but it takes that dark mud to produce the lotus. This year, I got to know a chaplain at San Quentin Prison. We're from the Bay Area in San Francisco, and she invited me to a concert in prison in San Quentin, and it was a kind of a dark, stormy night. And if you're familiar with that prison, you know it's out. Sort of jutting into the bay itself, and the tide was coming in, and so we got to the parking lot outside the walls. There's big stone walls, and the waves were sort of crashing against the pier there, and the sky was all cloudy and dark. And to enter the prison, you go through these fortress walls, and you go through iron gates. And there in the middle of the prison was a courtyard, and there's a little chapel in the middle of the courtyard, and we sat in the chapel. It wasn't as nice as this one. And the men come in, and they're the guys in the blue jumpsuits, the ones who've been there for a long time. And a choir sang that evening, and I felt the feeling of these walls, and then the beauty of the voices of this choir, and the last song that they sang a song by Leonard Cohen. And they only sang one verse, but they sang it over and over again. and it was the verse that goes, "Ring the bell that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There is a crack in everything, and that's how the light gets in." Forget your perfect offering. There is a crack in everything, which is how the light gets in. And I had grown up listening to Leonard Cohen, so I had heard the song before, but hearing it in that place from those voices gave it a new meaning for me. And those guys, you know, they had been there for 10, 20, 30 years, some of them. And they had a lot of that mud. A lot of mud. The trauma of their crimes that they were responsible for but were terribly traumatic. You know, the trauma of their upbringings, everything that had led them to their crimes, the trauma of living in prison, a lot of mud, and nothing to do with it but to sit with it. And it made me realize how often those of us on the outside who aren't forced to do so, you know, we don't examine our mud or our cracked parts. And so the parts of us that are feel strong and we feel wise and spiritual and worthy and beautiful, you know, all those parts of ourselves we try to spend time in because they feel good. And the Sufis are very wary of this because there's such a, it's so easy to make ego and to make a false piety out of those so-called perfect parts of yourself, those wise and beautiful parts of yourself. And it's so difficult to look at the cracked parts, even though the cracked parts, the parts where we feel very raw and vulnerable, you know, those are the parts that lead to our spiritual growth. Those are the openings through which we discover more, through which grace and love discovers us. You know, God doesn't care about any of our strengths or our knowledge. You know, God goes right to the most messy, vulnerable part of your heart that he can find. And yet we don't. Many of us try not to. So, partially because it's painful and it's raw. Maybe there are things about ourselves that feel unworthy or feel weak or feel shameful. And maybe it's not just how we feel. We're also part of a community. Many of us are part of many communities, a family and a workplace and a spiritual community and a neighborhood. We're part of these groups and maybe all of those cracked places aren't so welcome in those groups. you know, maybe we have a crack that doesn't feel like we can talk about in our community. I'm going to try to turn that off in a moment. And maybe our tradition, you know, our tradition privileges certain, and again, many of us have different traditions, and Sufism and other religious practices, and, you know, maybe our traditions give voice to certain parts of us and don't give voice to other cracked parts. And so they remain hidden. Let's take a moment to feel what inside of you could be an experience or a part of yourself or a feeling or a concept. What of you doesn't feel like it's always welcome in the spiritual path? What part of you is not getting invited to be part of this spiritual life? Now I'm going to ask you to do something very brave. The cracks.
The cracks where the light gets in.
I'm going to ask you to do something very brave, which is to share with someone something about what this makes you think, what this makes you feel. And you could share something that's very personal, but you don't have to. You could share something that's less personal, whatever you're comfortable with. But something about what parts of this experience feel invited and what parts don't feel invited. Does that make sense? So if you could find someone next to you and maybe reintroduce yourself and take a few moments with them. I'm going to go look at this sound system.
Sure.
It's so hard to change.
the shadow.
Creative setting, like with relation to the earth.
Different layers, you know, even concerning
like
that, you know.
It's true, like often.
If I find myself to get on a pity pot and say, oh, I'm this way because
unavailable for like anything else in life.
Okay, yeah.
While that was going on.
The voice darkened the soul.
That's a super valuable part of
ourselves in terms of
really
diminishment.
Keep it in mind.
I think I might play the song, not too much introduction, and then say some things about it afterwards.
Okay, but then you want to... I was going to do an exercise with the song. Can we still do that?
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, that would be good. So then I'll talk about it before, and then we'll play it, and then we can take it up from there.
No, I was going to do... I was going to introduce it with an exercise that they were going to do while listening to it.
Okay, so do you want me to introduce the song, and then you're going to get from the exercise and we'll play it? Do you want me to introduce the song, and then look at the exercise and we'll play it?
Yeah, or you could talk about Stoicism, and then I could introduce, I could give the practice for the song, and then you could talk about its origin. No, you talk about its origin.
I was going to do some stuff in motion,
okay.
And then talk about the song.
Okay, good.
And then
I'll... Exactly.
Okay. Okay. And about what time do you want to do that?
Mm-hmm.
About what time do you want to play it? Up to 3 and 3.
Sure.
And then about 10 minutes after the song came to it.
I know what's necessary to visit.
Yeah, I mean, well, we'll have plenty of time. I mean, talk for as long as you want, but don't feel like you need to fill up a lot of space.
Yeah.
There to be.
Yeah, I have a feeling it's the same amount of time. Take one more minute with your partner before we all come back together. And when you're ready, come back to our circle. A lot of feeling on our faces while we spoke. Would anyone like to say how it felt to talk with their partner? Something about the experience?
It felt like a relief in a way, you know, to admit something that I feel shame about and to have such a warm response rather than, oh yeah, we're joining you in that shame. It wasn't like that. So it was really a relief.
Yeah, I guess I shared about coming from the path of the drug addict. So for many, I think that might make it a bit easier to share their shame. I've got the worst shame.
No, I do.
So our topic for today is faking ecstasy, and it's kind of a funny term. I guess in American culture, we normally think of faking it till you make it, where you kind of put on a brave face and just kind of stuff all your insecurities into a little ball and go out there and put your best foot forward. And in this sense, I think our approach is more about how can one arrive at a state of ecstasy As we've kind of talked about in our last two classes, kind of without knowing how, without knowing the way, because to arrive at that state means a total transformation from where you've been before, from who you are. So it's more about creating this vessel, the container for ecstasy, out of the very fabric of our own state, whether that's imperfect or doubtful. How can we use the fabric of what we have in our experience on Earth to create the container for ecstasy and for union with God? So I'm going to read Murshid's words on ecstasy, and they refer to music as a kind of a helpful, like leading one, music, especially qawwali, can lead one towards ecstasy. So maybe some of you went to the concert last night, you can relate to some of what he says here. So, but there's going to be a pop quiz at the end, so pay attention. Ecstasy is called waj by Sufis. It is especially cultivated among the Chishtis, our path. This bliss is the sign of spiritual development and also the opening for all inspirations and powers. This is the state of eternal peace, which purifies from all sins. Only the most advanced Sufis can experience wajd. Although it is the most blissful and fascinating state, those who give themselves entirely to it become unbalanced, for too much of anything is undesirable. As the day's labor is a necessary precursor to the night's rest, so it is better to enjoy the spiritual bliss only after the due performance of worldly duties. Sufis generally enjoy wajd while listening to music called qawwali, special music producing emotions of love, fear, desire, repentance, etc. There are five aspects of wajd. Wajd of dervishes, which produces a rhythmic motion of the body, like whirling dervishes. Wajd of idealists, expressed by a thrilling sensation in the body, tears and sighs. Wajd of devotees, which creates an exalted state in the physical and mental body. Wajd of saints, which creates perfect calm and peace. And wajd of prophets, the realization of the highest consciousness called Sidrat al-Muntaha. One who by the favor of the murshid arrives at the state of wajd is undoubtedly the most blessed soul and deserves all adoration. And in another passage, he says that kind of these stages of wajd might be the first one might be a union with the ideal, where you can visualize the form of your ideal. And then from there, the love gushes forth for your ideal so that there is no form. And then finally, it is union with the divine beloved in inexplicable joy, joy completely beyond words. Tears wash away the sins of ages. All revelation follows ecstasy. All knowledge a book cannot contain, a language can never express, nor a teacher teach, comes to him of itself. So my question for you all, and it's a question that I naturally have after reading this, is this something you all have experienced? Does it feel accessible? Does it feel realistic? You know, has anyone touched on this in any moment of meditation or listening to music?
I find it incredibly accessible in a retreat like this, to be in a very high state. I've also, to returned with my levies, and to be on a tour and to get home in the winter to a very quiet place and to come crashing down from that ecstasy and yes, to feel very much on my own again.
Yeah. And I've experienced that too, where when one goes on retreat, you can kind of, you know, be swept up in the vibrations and the atmosphere. But then what happens in everyday life, you know, do you feel like it can be accessed when you're at work or kind of commuting or, you know, how does one kind of reconcile those two worlds? So, when we were kind of thinking about these themes, I always feel so compelled to bring in, you know, what about everyday life? Because that's the majority of our time here on Earth. It's wonderful to go on retreat, and it's wonderful to be in the atmosphere of one's teacher and kind of have these amazing meditations. But, you know, like Pirzia was talking about this morning, how do we kind of remember our origins and the source of where everything comes from, and even the source of our imperfections, kind of leading back to those divine impulses way far back, far beyond maybe what we can remember or know. So, one possible entryway back into that place of remembering one's origin, where one can bring every part of oneself to the ecstasy party. Because, you know, I don't think that in a state of absolute union with God, it's the kind of situation where it's like absolute union except for the part of you that was mean to your mom, you know, 2 months ago, or absolute union except for, you know, those bad things you did. So how can one scoop up the whole collective experience of one's life, good and bad, perfect and imperfect, and you know, bring that to union and make that a united whole? So one avenue might be to start with where one is and to, you know, look at, you know, what is in front of me? What is here? What is actually, you know, alive and authentic and can be turned towards, like the, you know, the cracks, turning towards them to let the light in, not away from them, but really almost inviting the imperfect parts of oneself on one's spiritual journey. So this is one of my absolute favorite quotes, and I have it on my mirror at home. I look at this every single day. This is from Marcus Aurelius, Meditations, Stoic philosophy. Concentrate every minute on doing what's in front of you with precise and genuine seriousness, tenderly, willingly, with justice, and on freeing yourself from all other distractions. You see how few things you have to do to live a satisfying and reverent life. So there's something about, and we've talked about hall and makam, where hall is like that state of grace that just comes and goes like the weather, and you can't control it, and it's like falling in love. And wajd is actually the presence, the actual presence of God. And Makam is like making the space, just kind of doing that dirty work, doing the daily grind, with your full self, with your attention, with your breath, with your presence. And you don't know. You don't know if it will pan out. And you don't know if ecstasy will happen. But it's like hunting the gazelle that Mirza talked about yesterday, where, you know, you can't get that gazelle if you don't go hunting for it, even though no one ever caught one by hunting one. It's the ultimate paradox. So, you know, it's definitely not going to happen if one doesn't believe it might. So there's something about taking up one's, you know, everyday duties with attention, with remembrance, and just working that connection to make the container. And also about relinquishing, not relinquishing the hope and the ideal, but relinquishing the bargaining chip, where it's like, if I do this, God, you gotta come. You gotta come hang out with me. I deserve it, okay? I've done the work. But being selfless about making that container and making the space for it. So we have a piece of music, speaking of music, that we're gonna play. And this is a piece of music by Schubert. It's his song Ave Maria, which you may know. And I looked into this song because when I get obsessed with something, I just research the death out of it. So there's something about this song that just kept coming up for me again and again, and I looked all into it. And Schubert, as it turns out, had a super rough life. He was one of 15 children, and only 5 of them survived infancy. So there was a lot of death in his childhood. He was from a pretty poor family. He struggled throughout his musical career to get patronage. He was kind of like a short, like rotund dude, and his nickname was actually Little Mushroom. So he didn't exactly have the most glamorous, you know, rock star life. And he just showed up and did this work. He sunk his teeth into composing, and he had health problems. He died at age 31 of syphilis, and, you know, he was just having a really rough go of it. So this song that he composed, Ave Maria, was actually the words of the hymn Ave Maria, the prayer to Mary, were not the original words that he intended for this song. He set this poem of Sir Walter Scott, if I can find it, to the music. And the poem is actually, it's a girl who is, you know, running from someone who wants to hurt her, and she's kind of imploring Mary to help save her. I don't actually think I have the, maybe I do. No, I don't, oh wait. Yeah, somehow I lost my page with the original poem on it. But the gist of it was, you know, Mary, Mary, even in these dark places, even when kind of all hope is lost and we're all just here in the mud, like the lotus flower, you know, we're here in the muck and the mud, and please, will you save us? Will you help us? It was kind of this cry. And then somehow, because it referenced the hymn of Ave Maria, someone later down the road set this, you know, the words of the hymn Ave Maria, the prayer Ave Maria, to this music. And so it just became this, you know, like well, I mean, container for ecstasy, just out of all of these improbable forces, where it wasn't like he was this kind of rapturous, pious person. He may have been agnostic, and in a letter to his father about this song, you know, he writes that, you know, oh, everyone is like kind of exclaiming about my piety, and it seems that this music just turns all hearts to devotion. And he kind of, I don't know his frame of mind when he wrote the letter, but it struck me as very like he was almost surprised at the result that this produced. And to me, it was the perfect example of how, you know, we do our work with the best that we have, and we just show up and use what gifts we have to make our best work and don't have any kind of expected result. And then some magic happens. There can be just this grace, this amazing presence. Something comes through, something that's very undeniable. So
when we listen to the song, let's try a practice, which is to offer up those cracked parts of ourself. And to really, instead of offering the perfect offering, instead to open up the cracked part, and to let that part receive this light.
Is the book that you first read from, that's written that kind of ecstasy?
Oh, it's from, I'd have to look it up because I copied it down. I can tell you later.
Thank you.
what does it feel like when we let light into that cracked part?
Someone said it earlier, like relief. Made me think of this morning, periods we were talking about, and the exhale of God and then inhale, and offering, you know, everything, offering everything. So all of my darkness and light, you know. I'm not sure that's very articulate.
Yeah, actually, that reminds me of another quote that's in here that if I can find it.
I appreciated Curiosia this morning talking about taking the actions of light into each word and action. Go through.
It feels like a relaxation comes into places. I just noticed different offerings sort of had different places in the body that relaxed as the song kind of came in. It just come into a place of a deeper ease.
I felt washed.
I felt like the prodigal son. Like bliss of coming home. That's all she wants is, that's the real offering.
Prodigal?
By the tears, yeah.
In a nostalgic, in a nostalgic.
The real sense of, I think that, for me, that's what God really wants. And the perfect offering is our brokenness.
This is in response to what you said, and it reminded me of something else Pirzia said this morning, which was about kind of the gratitude of, you know, kind of that gratitude of like the fullness of one's experience. To pass through this brief life as nature demands, to give it up without complaint, like an olive that ripens and falls, praising its mother, thanking the tree it grew on. Something about that fullness of experience when it's united with everything.
Could you read that again?
Mm-hmm. To pass through this brief life as nature demands, to give it up without complaint, like an olive that ripens and falls, praising its mother, thanking the tree it grew on.
I feel like giving my awareness and giving a voice to the parts that I will often be left in darkness is really like I feel like I'm finally being myself. To keep those parts separate or hidden or not spoken about or unrepresented is really to keep myself, a part of myself, hidden, unrepresented, repressed. And, so to give it a voice is to be myself, is to be natural. And that quote reminds me of this as well, to be just like a fruit on a tree, being myself. Marsha talks about that too, to be spiritual, it's just to be that.
There's an interesting tradition in Navajo carpet weaving, where there's a group of weavers or a tradition of weavers that do sort of circular patterns, one within the next, and they'll start in the middle and create a geometric circular pattern with a border. And then the next one out, and then the next one out. And the patterns are symmetrical and perfect, and sort of mathematical, but the weavers put in an intentional imperfection that is a thread of a color that's not in the rest of the piece and is going at an angle that's against the rest of the geometry of the piece. And they call this the spirit line, this crack of imperfection that runs through it. And they say that if the weaver doesn't put one in, then he's in danger of getting stuck inside his first pattern. So it's that imperfection that allows his spirit to get out of the first border and expand into this larger sphere. But then he can't make that larger sphere a perfect home either. There has to be a crack in that that'll allow him to get out and discover some new larger reality. And it's always through that that crack.
I've heard that masters will incorporate an air in, oh, I don't know, sand tanka, whatever. I mean, different traditions. But the word gratitude is such a fine word in terms of thinking about letting the light in, because it takes you beyond your own being, you know, into this, at least this awareness that there's something that awareness of the possibility of a transcendent state. It's a fine word. Gratitude, natural, prodigal.
So the trick is, how do we remember to appreciate our imperfection instead of instead of hide it? How do we remember to do that?
You want to end with a prayer?
Yeah, we're going to end a little early today.
We can end, unless, do you have something else you want to share? I think this is a good place to end.
Okay. Before we end, I just would like to take a moment and have some silence to digest the thoughts that we've had and the feelings, and to consider not only how we can accept our own imperfections and turn towards them, go beyond them, feeling gratitude, but also how we can fully accept and embrace every aspect of ourselves, bringing that into harmony, into unity, into the potential to become a vessel for the ecstasy that Mersha describes as being completely one with God, completely united with the divine, so that there is unspeakable joy, joy without words, joy beyond language. Just a complete acceptance as a container for divine presence. So we'll take a few moments of silence to reflect on those themes. Something else that comes to mind is how when we do the zikr and we sweep away la ilaha, we're sweeping away all of the false concepts, all of the places where we get stuck, all of the ideas that are old patterns that don't serve us anymore. And we sweep them away. They're not wanted anymore. They're not useful anymore. They don't support our awakening. They don't support us on our path. And then we sweep them away to make room for illallahu. And so if there's anything from today that doesn't serve you, that you're ready to let go, you can just imagine taking a broom and sweeping it out the door. And we'll close with the prayer for the universe self. O thou who art the maker, molder, and builder of the universe, build with thine own hands the universe cell, our temple for thy divine message of love, harmony, and beauty. Amen.
Wonderful afternoon.
Thank you very much.
Thank you all.
Thanks.